Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today, he's back! He's back! It's Al, baby cakes. Alex, what's up?
Back and better than ever, Andrew.
Oh, man, Al.
What's up?
You missed so much. You missed so much.
I know. I legitimately didn't watch Thunder games when I was like after surgery, so I missed like two games.
Oh,
it was probably for the best, but
yeah, it's overall better for your life right now. But you missed out on a lot of Kings stuff, and you got to make up for that a little bit.
I know.
Last night,
yeah, great.
With the Thunder Kings game,
and boy was I rewarded, Andrew,
for my boy. I just knew, like, I couldn't stop holding my breath basically that whole game, right?
Well, even now, looking back at the box score, because I wasn't box score watching during the game, but it's shocking that the Thunder were even close. They shot 35.7% from the field. 35 of 98. And honestly, watching the game, the only thing that made me realize in retrospect that they were shooting so bad is how loud the rims were. I felt like the rims were so incredibly loud during that game.
Oh, really? They got like them mic'd up
every
on the
5 seconds. It's like, bow, bow, bow. Because every shot was bouncing off. Yeah, that was kind of a brutal game.
Yeah. I mean, the Kings weren't tremendously better. They're 41% from the field, 27% from three. It was a really ugly, ugly basketball game between those two.
It was. I mean, and it sucks because Halliburton's going to be out for the season now, although it sounds like his injury isn't too serious. But it would have been fun to see him. Obviously, it would be fun to see Fox, which maybe we'll see Fox in one of these next two games. There are players on the Kings that could make these games more entertaining to watch. They just weren't really out there last night.
Yeah. I mean, you have Terrence Davis coming off the bench. He was like one of the only good players for them.
I legitimately
points on 13 shots.
I did not know Mo Harkless was on the Kings until last night.
Well, I did because I watched a lot of Kings for Slam and Jam. He's been fine for them. He's been kind of a placeholder guy.
Yeah.
For them. He was fine. DeLon Wright really kind of saved the day
for
the
sure.
Kings over and over again. His stat line is actually pretty great. 13 points, 4 blocks, 4 steals, 8 assists, 10 boards. I mean, that he was quite impressive. And then on the other end of that, Marvin Bagley, who's come back, I think this is his third game to play. That dude is horrendous. He was so bad. it was as if he had the Thunder in some kind of bet at the end of that game. He ruined about seven possessions at the end of the game for the Kings. I mean, I don't usually look at plus minus for individual games and say it means something. The minus 14 for Bagley means everything. That is everything to me.
And this was
because that's what happened out there.
And this is the type of game where, like, if you're a Kings fan, you got to be like, okay, Bagley, you're back. You're healthy. Fox and Halliburton are out. You can do whatever you want. Like, this should be, and you're playing a bad team. Like, this should be the game where it's an easy 20 and 10. Just go out there and get it. You should look amazing in this game. He puts up 13.
No. Moses, he couldn't do anything against Moses Brown. He couldn't do anything against Gabriel Deck. Nothing. Nothing. Even Jalen Horde out there was the center at one point. And he did nothing. He took a corner three and bricked it.
You got to wonder if they're going to cut their losses with him this summer.
I think they will.
Because I think you could still get something back for him at this point. Because yeah. He just has the name and the fact that he was the second pick overall. I think you could still get something, even if it's not really that much, but you might be able to get like a pick or a rotation player. Because I really like the rest of their team. And yeah. He seems to be one of the people that is obviously holding them back, other than maybe Luke Walton.
I know. Rashawn Holmes is good.
Yeah, I like Rashawn Holmes.
Last night. Yeah, he's got the floater going. Buddy Hield was not great last night. 5 of 16.
We really need him to step up these next two games.
I know. We need some big Buddy games. I think we can get there. And then also, I also just wonder if they're going to sit Dort at all.
Yeah, I mean, last night it worked to their advantage. I mean, Dort was probably one of his worst games of the season, at least offensively. And we've talked about this before, but his finishing at the rim in the second half, it happened like within the first 5 minutes. He had three takes to the rim that were just all bounced out. The thing with Dort going to the rim is like they all look fine. Like it's not like he's like wild out of control. Like it looks like, oh, this is a good take. This is going to have a good shot to go in. They just don't 50% of the time. And last night, I think in the restricted area, he was 1 of 4. And I can't explain it.
Yeah. 3 of 16 overall, 10 points, 4 assists, 4 boards. Still, you don't include him. There's maybe some minutes for Charlie Brown in the starting lineup, which I think certainly helps the Thunder's cause.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical that they will lose all three of these games to the Kings. It just seems this Kings team is not good.
They're not going to. They're going to win. They're absolutely going to win.
Wait, when I tweeted that out, people thought I was jinxing, trying to do a jinx when I said I'm guaranteeing a Thunder win tonight. That's actually how I felt. That was genuine.
Yeah, I felt that way too. I saw the injury report. No Harrison Barnes. Maybe the Kings get back Harrison Barnes.
That'd be great.
Which would help. And I thought, this Thunder team is going to. I thought they would beat them. Like handily, I thought it would be 10-point win for the Thunder.
Yeah, I was surprised when they got down by so much, and then was feeling great.
Yeah.
And then of course the Kings almost blow it at the end.
Gosh, that three from Roby that was in and out, like
wide,
really
open.
Good shot.
Yeah,
really nice form. Almost vomited
and
into my mask,
it was like
all over myself.
The 1-2 punch of, as that's happening, you're following these two other games. The Cavs, who have a chance to beat the Suns,
going
to overtime. So you're like excited about that. And then the Pistons have a chance to win. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is setting up. What if both of those teams win and the Thunder lose? Like, we're going to be in the third spot or something. And then it almost flips 180 in a matter of like 2 minutes. And you're like, oh no, really, why did I even think about that?
I know. Killian Hayes goes to the line, misses. Those are, I think those were his 12th and 13th free throws of the season.
Wow.
As he goes to the line and he screws it up. Thanks a lot, Killian Hayes. Someone who didn't screw up last night, Gabriel Deck, finished the night 16 points, 3 assists, 3 boards, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. He hit his first NBA 3 last night, Al.
Woo.
Thoughts on Deck?
Well, first of all, can we acknowledge how, I mean, we've talked about this all season, like how do we tell if something's real or not? Like how do we judge these guys? And honestly, looking back at earlier in the season, it was way easier back then for like multiple reasons. Like when these players are playing with Shea, and we've seen it, like I would especially say like Moses Brown, was significantly better when Shea was on the floor. I don't have the stats to back that up, but just remembering him, like he's still productive, but he was, he looked significantly better when Shea was out there. And I think that's true for a lot of players because I think Shea makes a lot of players better. We're now in this stretch where obviously Shea's out. We're watching a truly awful team. And I don't think we can emphasize that enough. Like it, since, in fact, I have the stat. Since Shea went out, the offensive rating of this team is under 100. It's 99.2. And that's over the course of 23 games. So that's a pretty long stretch. And that's happening in context of a season in which the average offensive rating is the highest it's ever been. So like offenses across the league are playing better than they ever have. And this offense that we've been watching over these last 23 games, last month and a half, has been like horrendously awful. So it's like, how do you really judge someone's play? Because early in the season, we would talk about like, oh, you know, this is going to be a tanking team. Somebody's got to score the points. Well, back then, turns out, like, maybe that wasn't accurate because that team was way more functional than what we're watching right now. Now, I think it's, like, completely relevant because not only are we watching a much worse team, we're watching a much worse schedule. Like, the second half of the Thunder's schedule, for a variety of reasons, is the opponents are just so much worse that we're seeing night to night. And so we're just seeing a lot more bad basketball. And so I don't want to get, like, too excited or too down on any player based on this recent stretch. I mean, I'll always remember. And another factor is that, like, this happens at the end of the season for all teams. Like, players put up weird stat lines, teams beat teams that they shouldn't beat. I'll always remember Ramon Sessions. I think he had like a 24 assist game in like an April game. Do you remember that? In his rookie season.
Yeah, I mean, he had triple doubles. He was crushing it for the Bucks.
Yeah, and then next season he comes in and like everyone's excited about him in fantasy. And it turns out like, oh, he's fine. And so so I just wanted to set the stage for that. So like I'm trying to be very careful about what I say about players and how they're playing right now. So for Deck, good things I would say is that it seems like he is very willing and able to get his own shot. He is not just out there as a facilitator. You know, he is very willing to go in the post and try something on someone, which I appreciate. And I think that's good because we've had Thunder players in the past who come in and aren't really trying to get their own. And that's probably because, you know, he's older and he's a pro and he's been doing this for a long time. But I think that's good. He's seems to know where he's supposed to be. We saw it last night. There was a cool play where he just kind of like slowly moved after like a missed shot into like the side of the lane, and then Ty Jerome found him and he just turned out he was like wide open and he just shot up a little floater and it went in. I think that's really good. He's held up defensively. Like nothing stuck out dramatically bad on the defensive side. And I think that's something coming, you know, coming overseas, people always worry about like, are these guys going to hold up defensively? I haven't seen anything that's really like a red flag on that end, which I think is good. And it seems like he can do a little bit of everything. Like last night, I mean, it was his first three, but, you know, showing a willingness to shoot threes. He can take it in the post. He seems to be relatively good in transition. He can pass. You know, he is a good facilitator. So overall, like I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far. But again, I just don't want to go too crazy yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's like pretty good on defense. He plays bigger than he is, which is nice. He's got he's really a tenacious defender, which I think is really good. I think that if he's going to stick in the league, it's because, like, I think that will be the primary reason. Offensively, yeah, good in transition, knows how to run the lanes, knows where to be. I just question, like, what is, like, a 6'6 guy, like, posting up? Like, how sustainable is that? Because that's how he primarily got his points last night.
Yeah.
See, like, he, like, Mark Jackson, somebody, like, back them down from the three-point line all the way to the bucket. Like, how many times can you actually do that in the course of an NBA season?
Yeah.
It's probably not many.
And not only that, but, like, on a good team, like, how many of those type of possessions are you giving to a role player like that?
Yeah. The answer is not many. So to me, it all comes down to the three. And he's got to speed up his release. And like, how often do 26-year-old guys speed up their release? Like, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
He's
to
in
that.
Thunder U now, Andrew. He's about to learn.
He is. He speaks no English. None.
Okay.
Like, absolutely zero. There was a translator for him, the only one time he's talked to the media so far. They had to have a translator, in which you just even lose track of what the question is because you have to tell the translator, who tells Deck, and then he tells the translator, and then the translator tells you. And yeah. Then, like, by the time it gets back to you, you're like, is that what I asked? Like, is that okay? Yeah, that's the right answer. So it's just difficult. But everybody seems to really like him. I think almost everybody was asked about him after the game for the guys who talked. And everybody seems to really like him. It's funny, like, you talked about, like, basketball IQ, but, like, the way that it was expressed last night by, I think, all three Thunder players was he knows how to play basketball. It's like, well, good. He's in the NBA. I hope he knows how to play basketball. It's just really
I would a funny agree, way though. To like, describe that's it. Honestly probably my biggest takeaway so far.
He would have to, because he does not speak enough English to, like, be able to communicate and, like, be able to have things explained to him. So he does know how to play basketball.
Is there anyone on the team who can communicate with him that speaks Spanish?
I don't know
if that's off the top of my head, if any of the players do.
I mean, we have French, like, Deck, Maladon, Horde speak French. Same with Dort.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so, actually. Like, maybe Poku does, but I don't know. I don't know that for sure.
Man, that must be tough.
It's got to be incredibly difficult. I mean, it's crazy to think about how many different languages all these guys can speak. They talk about Svi and... you know, all these guys, just it's a wild bunch. Speaking of Svi, I tweeted this out last night, has 12 dunks so far with the Thunder. And in his other, like, 130 something games in the league, he has 13 total dunks.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It is. It's very weird. That was actually going to be one of my most interesting stats of the season.
I asked him about it after the game. And I didn't really know how to ask it. So I said the stat, you've had this many dunks here, that you've had this many dunks there. And I was like, well, what's up with that? That's what I ended up saying to him. And he was like, well, and he's like trying to think of an answer for it. And he's like, well, I'm, you know, running and jumping more. He actually said, like, I'm jumping more. It was like something he said. And then he was like, I have no idea how to answer that. He's like, I don't know. He's like, somehow I'm getting more opportunities to dunk here than I did in LA or in Detroit. He's like, but I don't really know why. It's just like, okay, that's a fine answer. I don't know either. I don't understand it either. Because when he dunked last night, it was like a nice jam, right? Like a really nice dunk. And the Thunder bench was rarely audible last night. You didn't hear them very much, but you definitely heard them before he took off. Before he even jumped, this team stood up and knew what was going to happen. And it is odd that a guy like that, that you know is going to throw down some nasty dunk, had like barely dunked before. It's just a really odd thing.
It is. And I don't think, I mean, I guess the only explanation would be that that is probably not the reason why he was drafted by the Lakers. Like, they did not draft him mm-hmm. because he was a dunker. And so, and he was going to a team where, you know, he has a clear role. You know, we want you to be a shooter. And the same was probably true at his second stop. I mean, this is probably just the first time where he's had a little bit more freedom to be in those positions or to be put into those positions. And so mm-hmm. that's probably why he's getting a few more opportunities. But yeah, it is weird because he looks like super comfortable dunking. He's like, looks like he's just like a regular good dunker. And for that to just like begin randomly, like 4 years into his career, is kind of funny.
so strange. I don't get it, but it's kind of a fun little wrinkle there. Okay, let's go to Tankathon real quick. I'll share my screen and we can take a look at Tankathon together. If you are watching on the stream, if you are not subscribed to our YouTube channel, be sure that you do that and then you can follow along with us. So the Thunder currently sit at fourth. We're climbing, Al.
Climbing.
They're half a game up on Cleveland and Orlando. They sit half a game back of Minnesota, who is 6-4 in their last 10. That's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And then they sit, two full games back of Detroit, and then they're not catching Houston. So I was asked this on Monday, but where do you think the Thunder will end up when it's all said and done?
So I believe Minnesota has a game left against Orlando, and I would favor Minnesota in that game. So that would get them to 21. Now, once you get to 21, there could be a tie at the end, and they just, I forget how they do it.
So Minnesota has Memphis, Miami, Orlando, Detroit.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Okay.
So that's great. If they can just continue winning, like I think if they can win both those games, that puts
they could get to 22.
Pretty nice position. Then Denver, Boston, like they could probably beat Boston. Boston's been really bad lately, and then Dallas.
Okay, show me.
Let's look at
Orlando winning, and Detroit too.
Okay. So,
because again, as we mentioned, I do think the Thunder are going to get to 22 wins, which, by the way,
we're
not going to do it this week because it's not ready yet, but we were going to go over our over unders from beginning of the season. And if mm-hmm. I remember correctly, OKC was 22.5. That's how like close it is.
it felt like a sure failure.
Yeah.
Like 5 weeks ago. Felt like a foregone conclusion.
And for me, it felt like a victory. Or no, I took the over. You took the under.
Yeah, I took the under. I'm still feeling kind of good about it.
Yes, it comes out
I didn't
to
feel
two
good
games.
For a long time. Shoot. So this is Orlando's schedule. Boston, Charlotte, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Atlanta, then Philly.
That's much tougher. I mean, I guess the one chance is if by that time, by those last two games, if Philly has put some distance between them and the other teams around them, mm-hmm. maybe they'll be sitting someone, but mm-hmm. that would be the only real hope there.
Here's Detroit, Memphis, Philly, Chicago, Minnesota, Denver, Miami.
So that, I mean, right now it looks like that comes down to the Chicago and Minnesota games. So
yes, on paper, that's what it looks like.
Okay, so if I think Minnesota is going to probably win at least two of those. Oh, yeah, what are the Cavs doing?
Cleveland is a gauntlet, man. So they just lost to Phoenix. They have Portland, Dallas, Indy. They could probably beat Indy. Indy's not good, even though they beat the Thunder by 57. They're not good. Boston, Washington, Brooklyn.
Hmm.
This Brooklyn game could be one where they sit everybody.
Yeah.
And Cleveland is just the right kind of team to just go win.
I mean,
their last game against Brooklyn.
Last night, that was super impressive. And Colin Sexton's back. Now, Darius Garland was out last night. it would be nice if they could get their full squad back for a few of these games, which again, I think is in their, I mean, they want that to happen. They still need to see what these guys look like together. And even if you only get a few games of it at the end of the season, I still think it's valuable. Okay, so the so basically these teams need to get to 22 because we do think that OKC is probably going to win at least one of these Kings games, which would get them to 22. And that is what makes me nervous because I just, I don't know. Looking at those schedules for those other teams, the only team I feel confident about is Minnesota, who needs to win two games to get to 22. So in that scenario,
I feel pretty confident about Minnesota getting two.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So right now I'm starting to feel more like OKC is going to end up at five.
Yeah, four or five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which 5 weeks ago we would have given up a lot of things to end up there.
To get up to five, yeah.
As if it felt like they were going to end up at eight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the good news, I don't know if it's that good news, but they're not going to fall lower than six at this point.
Yeah.
So that's, we at least have a backstop.
Yeah.
So six is the worst it can be. How does it work when teams tie, though? Because I do feel like there's a high possibility that there's going to be some ties.
So if they tie, they split the odds.
Okay. So that wouldn't be a horrible outcome.
Yeah, it's not a bad outcome. Shouts to Stephen Dolan on that one, because I just talked about it as if it were like a real, like a tiebreaker for playoff standings, and that's not how it works. It works
well because they used to
at
do
the bottom.
Yeah, because higher up they do coin flip, right?
Yeah,
or at least they used
to. Yeah, it could turn into a coin flip. Yeah. But it's so it's not detrimental to tie. It's not the worst thing.
Yeah,
you get equal odds there. So. So the Thunder's upcoming schedule, Golden State, both at Chase on Thursday and Saturday, and then Sacramento, Sunday, Tuesday. So perhaps they sit guys second night of a back-to-back on Sunday.
They need their rest.
In Sacramento. Everybody get some rest, and then maybe Tuesday would be the day that I may circle and say that's the one they'll win. In Sacramento. And then they finish with Utah and the Clippers. And if you look, let's look at the standings to see how close Utah and the Clippers are. Because getting the one seed should be a priority for Utah. And they're just going to be in lockstep with Phoenix.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a game that they can just throw. And then the Clippers too. Like, the Clippers don't want to finish. Let's say if the Lakers are in 4 or 5, the Clippers don't want to finish fourth, right?
I would agree.
So those aren't necessarily throwaway games for those teams. I think the play-in has made, like, these throwaway games, which, like, some teams would have up to, like, 4 or 5 throwaway games, you know, where they're just resting guys for the end of the season. I just don't know what teams would be primed to do that, even in the East. Like, I just don't know that there's really any teams that are just going to throw games.
Yeah, there's not a ton of separation. And I feel like because it's so bunched up at the bottom of the Western Conference with Dallas, LA, and Portland, you're not going to be able to really know what you're supposed to do because those positions can change night to night.
Yeah, I mean, this could come down to the last. This is great. And this is exactly why, and I know there's a lot of people that hate the play-in. This is exactly why they did the play-in, was because you get down to these games, and before they just didn't matter. Like, how many games in it's really late April in a normal season, like, really mattered? There just weren't that many. There were a few you could circle, but now it's, like, you look at the schedule for last night, it was playoff implications all over the place. You had Golden State, New Orleans, like, that was a big one. Yeah, the Clippers, who came down to the wire with Toronto, that was a big one. Milwaukee, Brooklyn is a huge one. Dallas, Miami, that's a big game. The implications for Phoenix, if they blew it against the Cavs, like, that meant something. I mean, it is wild. And then you go to tonight's games, and like these games are starting to matter, which is great. That's a great thing for the NBA. I know LeBron wants somebody fired, but these games matter. The Celtics, like, they need to beat the Magic. The Trailblazers have to beat the Cavs. And there's pressure on a lot of these teams.
Yeah, and
to win.
I think it's fun too because there's so many points of inflection. So there's like the teams trying to get into the play-in, there's the teams jockeying for position in the play-in, and then there's the teams trying to get out of the play-in. So there's so many points where teams like need to win to better their position, which I just think is really fun because it takes you like mm-hmm. way down the standings where it still matters.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love this, especially covering like the whole league now. Like it's the best because like you don't have to make up content. Like it's created for you by this drama.
And with the Pelicans, it kind of felt like they were out of it after that first loss to the Warriors, but then they win last night. And if you look at the Spurs' upcoming schedule, like it is brutal. They're basically playing every good Western Conference team. So they still have a shot if the Spurs like completely, if the bottom falls out, which could just because of the strength of schedule. So yeah, it's fun.
It's great. Let's go to the stream real quick. We have Christian in Colorado. We have the Fluky in Germany. We have Trey Brown in Brooklyn. He said, let's go. Let's get a Cavs win tonight. God, that would be great. I'd be elated. Hoopstock 69 from the moon. We have Falk in Denmark. We have Xander Flame says, who's that babyface killer next to Andrew? Tyler Field, I think it says, welcome back, Al. Trey Witzel, who I believe is in OKC. What's up, Trey? We have Zach Sanford. We have Christian Luer. Tyler Field is in Edmond. We have Josh Morrison in Virginia. He says he's got big deck energy. We have Crimson King in Henrietta. We have Dylan Walker checking in from Neptune, all sorts of planets. Taylor Kraft. He says, bring back Antonio Daniels. He said he wanted to come on the show. So I'll have to bring him back on. Let's see. Lots of people. Yoni, welcoming you back. Al from Israel. We have Brushy in Albuquerque.
Wow.
He's watching with his 2-week-old son. Congratulations. It's great. Jack Thomas in Sydney, Australia. Senator Kenneter in Nashville. Let's see. Ty Gatewood. Chaz Stewart from Las Vegas. Brody Berman with a wavy hand. Let's see. Jake in Kansas City. Hope everybody's doing well on this Wednesday morning. Paul Chi, who believes in Jamaica. Miguel Davila, as always. Carpet in New York. Nate in Omaha. Jumping Bear in China. Chad Scott in Yukon. Thanks so much for joining. We have Cow Tran in Melbourne. Hope everybody's doing well. And we will be back right after this quick break. And we're back after that quick break. Before we go to our 7 most interesting Thunderstats of the season, I want to wish Michele Barra a happy birthday.
What?
Happy birthday, Michele.
Happy birthday.
On Cinco de Mayo. Wow.
Man, we have a lot of birthdays coming up. You're in 10 days.
I know. It's coming up.
Do you want to talk about Shea real quick, though?
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Shea. So the Thunder gave an update pregame about Shea, saying, and Mark Degnall said that he has a significant tear. And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that different than plantar fasciitis, Al?
That is my understanding. I mean, plantar fasciitis is inflammation of in that area of the foot, and you can tear that, and you can have a partial tear, you can have a full tear that needs to be repaired. It was interesting that they brought it up then, because I think in my head I was thinking, okay, he has plantar fasciitis, inflammation of the foot, and that takes a while to heal, and so that's a perfectly legitimate reason for Shea to be out for a long time, because we've seen with players in the past with this same injury that it's one of those tricky injuries where you think you can play and then you come back too early, and like with one tweak can immediately like reinflame everything and you're back where you were. So that's kind of how I thought it was going. Saying that it was a significant tear is just, I don't know. I would like more clarification, because you would think with a significant tear, I mean, what do we know just from watching him so far? Like, he hasn't needed to be in a boot. He hasn't needed to be on crutches. He's been jumping around on the sidelines looking, you know, perfectly fine. I mean, he can't play basketball, but he's you know, able to move around fine. He's not limping or anything like that, or like keeping weight off of that foot. Yep. So it's just very confusing, and it would be nice to get some additional clarification. I think, you know, long term, it probably doesn't matter. Like, he's going to be able to heal from it regardless of what the injury is. He's getting a lot of time off right now. So I'm not really concerned for his future, his ability to play basketball. But yeah, it was just a little strange, because it was, and it was more strange because this has happened before. It happened with Bazley. We were told it was a shoulder contusion for the longest time. And I always thought that was kind of weird. It's like, wow, why is it taking so long for Bazley to get back from something that is basically a bruise? You know, he's a bruised shoulder. Why is this taking so long? And then it turns out, like, right when he gets back, they're like, oh no, it's a broken scapula. It's like, oh my gosh, that sounds awful. That's way different. That sounds really painful.
Yeah.
And so it feels like that's happening again. And I don't really know what the incentive is in not giving like the full details up front.
I don't understand it either.
I know that teams have done that. I mean, that was always a thing, like in the NFL, but there's like a strategic reason to do that, like to not give the full details during the week, because then your opponent doesn't know if a player's coming back or not. With the Thunder, like, these guys are out for such an extended period of time. I don't think like teams at this point are like, oh, should we still prepare for Shea? Like, is he coming back this game? So I don't really know what the competitive advantage would be to not fully revealing the injury. So yeah, it's weird. And I think if it happened in isolation, it would just kind of be like a shrug. But because it's happening right after the Bazley thing, it's just kind of a strange pattern. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to explain it.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't either. But had they announced that he had a significant tear in March,
we would have instantly been like, oh, okay, well, he's not coming back this season.
He's done. And I just think that also it would save a little bit of like the national media even going like, well, they put Shea on the shelf for the rest of the season.
Right.
And acting like it was like an active choice. And I knew I had assumed that it wasn't an active choice that they were making for the rest of the season. I knew it was had to be a significant injury for them to sit him. But it would have just been nice to know what it was from the start, if that's what it was from the start. Or if he did have just inflammation and then tore it later. You know, but I don't think that's the case. I think that it has been a significant tear since the beginning, which I don't know. I just don't. Yeah, I've been racking my brain trying to figure out an angle for that to make sense.
Yeah, and the only thing I could think of was like, if after the loss to Indiana, I mean, that was really like the first time that like the Thunder tank started to get some real negative national media attention. You've heard it from different like individual pockets throughout this past month and a half, but that game losing by 50 or whatever they did, that was the first time where there were like multiple accounts on my timeline saying like, oh, this is embarrassment or whatever, like what the hell is going on at OKC. And you just wonder like if the league at that point was just like, hey, what's really the status of these guys that you're holding out, and would that prompt OKC to like give a more detailed explanation of what these injuries are. I don't, like, that's the only thing I can come up with, and even that seems like far-fetched. I don't really think the league would care after like that one game.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't know. So it's kind of a mystery to me, to be honest, but regardless, I just don't think he's going to come back for the rest of the season. It just doesn't make any sense. I've been saying that for a while, right? If we got down to like the last 2 weeks and he hadn't played, it just doesn't make any sense for him to return. because it's like a heavy road schedule. Like, it's like, what's the point? Like, there's no real benefit to him playing any of these games the rest of the season for anybody, right? I mean, it's not like, oh my gosh, right, if he gets to play against Utah and the Clippers, he's really going to develop into a superstar. Like, no, like, I think that he's got that already coming for him. So, anyways, yeah, there was some news, and that's kind of strange, but let's move on to our seven most interesting stats of the Thunder season, Al.
Okay. I don't even know if I have seven. I think I may have more than seven. But
here come a number of stats.
But I think Seth Partnow, he did seven most interesting stats for the league this season. And so I thought I'd bring up the stats. And some of these stats are stats that we've talked about before. But when looking at this season as a whole, these are just the ones that stick out to me as either most interesting or most meaningful. So let's start with the one we've already talked about. We'll start least interesting to most interesting, which is Svi dunking. You mentioned 12 total with OKC. You got another one last night. 13 in his career previously. I calculated dunks per minute, Andrew. In OKC, one dunk every 49 minutes. He's basically doing one dunk a game. That's pretty good. Previously, one dunk every 180 minutes. That's about 3.5 games. Wow. So he's really increased his dunks per minute rate. When I originally did that, I did dunks per hour, and that was stupid. They were both like point something.
Wow. He's really upped his DPM.
He has. But yeah, that's interesting. So that's number seven. Although, again, I don't know if I have seven. Number six, Moses Brown. Now, interestingly, when you go on Basketball Reference versus NBA.com, they calculate total rebound percentage differently. But I wanted to look historically, and so I used Basketball Reference because I was using StatHead. Moses Brown's total rebound percentage, which is the percentage of rebounds that he gets when he is on the court, is 21.5%, which is highest in OKC franchise history.
Yeah.
You could argue he's the best rebounder we've ever had, which...
It's a crazy number, yeah.
On the one hand, it is a crazy number. On the other hand, like, you start thinking back of the rebounders that we have had, it's basically like Enes Kanter, and then there's a drop-off. Like, there weren't a
like
ton.
Russ.
Yeah.
Like Russ,
yeah,
is probably honestly, number Russ two,
is,
right?
Yeah,
Russ is number
two. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went on StatHead and looked at players who have gotten at least 20% of the rebounds while they're on the court by the age of 21. And it's a short list. It's only 17 people, and Moses Brown is on that list. And like Andre Drummond is on there three times. Dwight Howard's on there twice. Shaq is on there. Moses Malone. Kevin Love twice. Greg Oden. Rudy Gobert. Like, those are some legit rebounding names. Like, guys that you think of as great rebounders. And then there's some random guys. You know, Samuel D'Alembert. Shout out. One of my favorites.
Oh, man.
Greg Samuel Oden is on that list. Buck Williams. But it's just a very interesting list to be on because it is definitely the aspect of his game that you just cannot deny. He has played enough this season where you cannot deny that Moses Brown is a very good rebounder, perhaps the best in Thunder history.
Yeah.
So that is pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Okay. I think I'm going to save this one because this one actually I think is the most interesting. It's not the one you would expect. Okay. Let's do one that you'll already know. These are two stats about Dort. Now, obviously, for every negative one, I want to make sure I give a positive one. So the positive one for Dort is that his three-point percentage has stabilized, 34.5%. Obviously, we've been talking about this all season, so it may not seem that interesting right now. But I think when you get to the end of the season and you think about the most important stats that came out of this season, Lugans Dort shooting 34.5% from three on over six attempts per game is probably not the most important, but it's probably the second most important because I think some of these Shea stats are more important. But it's probably second most important. The fact that Dort has turned into a legitimate three-point shooter. And he started off the season so hot, and then it kind of tanked, and you started to wonder, like, ooh, are we heading back down to 30%? But it really has stabilized, and he's going to hover right around 35% for the season, which I just think is a massive accomplishment.
It's wonderful. It shows he's going to be a real player. And I still had questions after the bubble. I thought he was really good in the bubble. But I had questions. Can he become a shooter? And if not, then like, what is he on the offensive end when right. the game slows down? And the fact that he can hit threes, and it's not just stand there waiting, like he relocates for threes a lot, and he hits above the break threes, and he hits threes off the dribble. It's not just someone is out there creating for him and he's catching and shooting. It's not like, it's not like Mo Harkless. You know, Mo Harkless has been a standstill three-point shooter his whole career. And he's had good seasons, he had bad seasons. And he certainly is not a volume three-point shooter for that reason. But, I think that that's it. It is. It's huge. It's huge for the Thunder, because I think that you can add another huge accomplishment with regards to player development. And then a guy that you can say, yeah, we have upwards of 2+ players that we know can play on a good team, which is a really good start.
And so at this point, I think, and the thing that gets you excited is if you look at the breakdown of his threes, he's shooting 44% from the corners. Yeah. And where he's not been great is above the break, and that's where he's taking the majority of his threes. He's shooting like 32.5% there. So you would imagine on a better team where he is not having to take on such an offensive load like he is right now, he's going to be getting more corner three attempts, and his that percentage is just going to continue to increase as he's just taking a better selection of threes. Now, the bad stat for Dort, one we've already talked about, is just his finishing at the rim. I think it was like 3 weeks ago when we first brought this up. I think he was around 52.6% on shots in the restricted area. He's now down to 50.8%. And the only players in the league who are worse than that in the restricted area, who take a decent amount, so like more than 3 shots in the restricted area per game, it's Fred VanVleet and Derrick Rose. Those are basically the only players. DeMarcus Cousins is down there, but he hasn't played that much. Yeah. Which honestly, like a big man shooting under 50% from the restricted area, like unbelievable.
He's toast.
Yeah. He's toast. But yeah, Derrick Rose and Fred VanVleet, two guys who are having like fine seasons.
All three having good seasons.
Yeah, but just cannot finish at the rim. And so obviously that's something we're going to be paying attention to going forward. Let's do Baisley's most interesting stats next. Now it has turned into less of a numbered order, and now I'm just going by player. But I think this would be fourth most interesting. Okay, the positive one for Baze is that he is contesting more threes per game than any player in the league. He's contesting 4.5 threes per game. Interestingly, Shea is sixth in the league, and Dort is 15th in the league. So three of the top 15 in the league in terms of contested three-point shots are from the Thunder. And I just thought that was interesting because it adds a little bit of context to early on in the season where teams weren't shooting that well from three against the Thunder. Mm-hmm. And we were like, is this a fluke? Is this not a fluke? You know, whether it's a fluke or not, I still don't know. But at least we have some evidence that, well, they're doing the work to try to contest these threes. And that seems to be a mandate from Coach Daigneault's system to go contest these threes. So I thought that was really interesting. And I do think, you know, this is only one aspect of defense, but I would say that Baisley's defense, similar to last season, is the part of his game that I feel most confident in right now. Because offensively, I just, if there is a guy who's like, someone has to score the points, I feel like that is Baze right now.
Yeah.
Because he's doing a lot, and he's driving a lot, and he's got a lot of great takes to the rim. But just overall, I feel like his offensive game is just still really inefficient. And so I'm just not super confident in his offensive game yet. I'm still like waiting to see how that shakes out. Whereas I actually feel pretty good about him defensively long term.
I kind of feel the opposite.
Really? You feel better about his offense? But what is it about his offense? Like, what part of his offense are you confident in?
He's gotten much better on the drive and at finishing at the rim.
He has. And by the way, he's in the restricted area, he's shooting 60%. Because I did happen to notice him when I was looking at the other players.
It's up from, I think he finished 53% last season. So, like, that's improved a lot. I asked him about it last night. He said that he said it's really just been, he's been working with the coaches all season on how to finish better at the rim. That's something that he's worked on a lot. And I think the shot will come. Like, the shot doesn't look bad. The three-point shot doesn't look bad. There's nothing about it that makes me think, okay, he's... I think it's the maybe perhaps the variety of threes that he's taken this season. But he's not been good from three. But after watching him his rookie season, I still think that that is going to improve. Especially whenever if he gets... Like, if the Thunder somehow get, like, Jalen Suggs and they have Shea and you have, like, real creators out there. Because, like, right now, they're not playing with any creators. He made a three last night, and it's because the Kings played Kings defense, and that's not playing defense.
Right.
So I think the three will come. I don't know. I just watch him, and I think it looks good. Like, I've never thought he has a bad-looking three. So I think the offense will come. I think he's actually been not as versatile defensively as I thought he would be. Like, he gets blown by smaller guards. He's not big enough to guard bigger guys. Like, he's not that versatile of a defender yet.
I think that versatility will probably come as he fills out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mentioned it when they played the Sixers, like, seeing him next to Ben Simmons was really wild. Like, how much bigger Ben Simmons is as a human being.
He's still thin. Yeah. Even though, like, you see him in the offseason and you think, oh my gosh, he's gotten so much bigger. Like, he's still really slight.
He still has a muscle watch preseason coming.
Oh, with that, there's going to be big time Baze muscle watch.
Yeah. We'll get a report that, like, Baze has added 25 pounds of pure muscle.
I know. Joel Angel checking in from Antarctica, which is very cool. There's a question for you, Alex.
What?
Says rumor has it Alex indeed broke his hand on purpose to not do the Kings pods. Can you confirm that this is true?
No. I if I could take it all back, I would definitely not break my hand. I would definitely not break my left hand. God, sucks.
I think you would have really enjoyed Jason Jones's off pod stories about the Kings.
Oh, really?
Anyway, yeah. I'll have to tell you later.
And as you alluded to, the bad stat for Baze, historically bad shooting season. And Poku's almost on this list, by the way. But in terms of players who have taken at least 5 threes per game shooting under 30%, there's only 17 guys who have ever done that. A lot of great names on the list. Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose, Kevin Love, Gilbert Arenas, Steph Curry. Although that was, like, in a shortened season last year. Kobe, Isaiah Thomas, Blake Griffin. And Poku is at 4.5. So Poku, if he comes back, he could get on this list because he is way down there. I mean, he's like at 25%. Again, I don't really care because these guys, they happen to be the youngest on this list. I mean, Baze is still 20. He's not even going to turn 21 until this summer. So who cares? Yep. And I'd rather him shooting the threes and not shooting them. But still interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, next most interesting stat. I think we're down to number three, Andrew. Some Shea stats. These are ones we've talked about, but I do think these are probably the most important stats of this season, which one is Shea's drives, 25.2 per game, 5 more than any other player in the league. And the top 5 for that is Shea, Luka, Trey, De'Aaron Fox, and DeMar DeRozan. That has always been the stat from this season that jumped out to me. Mm-hmm. And then going along with that, the percentage of field goals made that are unassisted, Shea is number one in the league among players who have played, like, you know, more than 5 games. 87.1% of his field goals made are unassisted. And as a comparison, the top 5 for that stat is Luka, Chris Paul, Trae Young, James Harden. Like, I think that stat is just really good to put into context of, like, the type of player, like, the type of game that he has.
Yeah.
Like how important as an alpha player, like, he has an alpha game. He is the type of guy who's going to be running a team, taking over the team, getting his own shot whenever he needs it. And the fact that he's number one in that stat is really impressive. 87.1%. That'll come down as they get better players on the team, especially if they get another ball handler. But it kind of lets you know what kind of player he can be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's impressive.
So those are my Shea stats. I think that was number three. I hope
it's a good reminder too. Like, we just haven't seen Shea in so long that I think it's easy to forget how good he's been. And it's been It's been really something.
Buy low. Buy low, Andrew. If anyone's selling. Number two most interesting stat. Almost done. This one is a team stat, which is the 35.6 three-pointers per game. We wanted this team to shoot threes for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And it started to happen when they got Paul George.
Yeah.
And those teams shot somewhere between 30 and 32 threes per game. And yep. And that was great. And that was increasing. And then we even saw it in the CP3 year. But the stat that like really hammered it home for me was that they're taking 40.4% of their shots are three-pointers. The next highest in Thunder history was last year at 35.3%. So they've had a significant jumping 5% in terms of the amount of threes that they're taking. And I think this speaks to the type of system that Mark Daigneault wants to run. Mm-hmm. But really, it just gets me excited. And I know on the one hand, you could say like, this is what a lot of bad teams do to increase their variance. They take more threes. But it does seem like in terms of the guys they're bringing in, it's not just that they're taking threes, they're also identifying shooters, which that's going to be my number one most interesting stat. But I think that's a really important stat for what this team is going to be going forward, because it is such a dramatic departure from what we were used to in the first era of Thunder basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're the beautiful basketball that we've admired from teams like the Spurs and the Warriors and teams like that. I think that that's coming for OKC.
Yeah. Okay. My most interesting stat of the Thunder season, Andrew, there's two of them. Are you excited?
So excited.
The first stat is about pick and roll as a ball handler. Okay. The pick and roll play as a ball handler. Points per possession. Best on the team is Ty Jerome. 1.14 points per possession as a pick and roll ball handler. Shea, who is also very good at that, is at 1.12. Now, let me contextualize that a little bit for you. 1.14, who is that comparable to? Now, these guys are taking way more of these possessions per game. Because Ty right now, he has about three possessions per game where he is the ball handler in a pick and roll.
Yeah,
Kawhi Leonard, 1.14 points per possession, pick and roll ball handler. Steph Curry, 1.14 points per possession, pick and roll ball handler. I think we have something in Ty Jerome. And this is only one of the stats that would prove that, because the other, and I would say arguably the most interesting stat of the entire season, is that Ty Jerome is having the best high-volume shooting season in OKC history, arguably. So
interesting.
No one has taken more shots per game and shot a better percentage from three in OKC history than Ty Jerome. So if you just look at players who have taken at least five threes per game, he is number one at 41.8% from three. Now, you could argue that Gallo's year last year was actually better because he actually took two more threes per game and shot 40.5%. Paul George, obviously.
PG? Yeah.
Yeah. PG had a great season where he shot 7.7 threes per game and shot 40.1%. But for a role player coming off the bench to, one, get up that many threes per game and then to shoot that well on them, those two stats are some of the reasons why, of all of these like role players and trying to figure out who's going to matter going forward, Ty Jerome is just a guy that I would like to see more of going forward. I would like to see him on this team long term, even if it's still in a smaller off-the-bench role.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we looked at shooters on other teams like this and been like, man, if the Thunder could just get that guy. Like, they just need one of, like, just get one of those guys. And, like, the closest guy the Thunder have ever had is Alex Abrines.
Right.
To do this. And he had one of the weirdest NBA careers. So,
The difference is between Ty and someone like Alex Abrines is it's not just the shooting. And that's why I brought up that pick and roll stat. Like, he can do other things, and he can do them really well. So if you have really someone passer, like that who is skilled in multiple areas and, oh, by the way, is like a 42% three-point shooter, I just think he has been, for me, like the biggest long-term find of this team. Because he's still – I know he's older than, you know, Dort and Baze and Poku, but he's still, like, in that age range. You know, he's not Kenrich Williams, who's 26 or whatever. He's, I think he's 23. So he's still in the age range with a lot of these young guys. So I think it makes sense for him to be on the team long term.
Yeah. And I think that timeline, I really would only worry about timeline with regards to stars. Like, I wouldn't worry about timeline with regards to role players.
True.
So I just don't think that it matters all that much. You want your stars to grow together, certainly, and to be on the same timeline. But role players come and go, and you need to have like a mix. And I think that's why it's like totally fine to keep Kenrich around for the long haul, is because I think that you need older guys. You need more experienced guys out there that can bring it and that can show guys things. Like, things changed a lot when Kendrick Perkins came here for the better on the defensive end, because he had experience and he was able to show some of those guys the way with regards to just toughness on that end, and even like mental toughness. Like, Perk brought a lot of that, which really helped the team take the next step. So if you can already have some of the older guys on your team, I don't think it's a bad thing.
When I was looking for stats, a stat unrelated to this year's team, I realized how bad Kendrick Perkins' turnover percentage was. Now, he didn't get the ball a lot, so his actual turnover totals weren't that crazy.
Yeah.
But his turnover percentage when he was in OKC every single year was hovering. Let me see. I can look at it real quick. When he joined OKC, 27.5%, 24%, and 28.8%. Meaning like the percentage of his possessions that ended in a turnover was basically 1 in 4 that entire time.
Which, just in your brain, doesn't feel shocking.
It doesn't, and yet it still shocked me.
Yeah.
To see that high of a number. Because I think
his
hands were just
that bad.
Yeah, because Isaiah Roby, he has a really high turnover percentage. And so that's what led me down that road. But it wasn't interesting enough to make my list.
Yeah. And Roby's just trying stuff. A lot of...
Well, I would argue that Perk was trying stuff too, Andrew.
True. True. Roby's is kind of an interesting offensive player for your like 8th or 9th guy.
Yeah. Yeah, 8th or 9th guy. I can buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more in on him than I was at the beginning of the season.
That is what's so hard. So many of these players are being put in positions that they're never going to be in likely again when this team starts adding blue chippers. Which is one of the reasons why I'm high on Ty Jerome, because I actually think his role on this current team is pretty analogous to what it would be on a good Thunder team. And so I feel like it's easier to project him. Whereas some of these other players, it's like, is Moses Brown really going to be the starting center of the future? Probably not. Is Isaiah Roby going to be the starting center of the future? Probably not. No. And so you'd like to see them get extended minutes in the roles that they're eventually going to be in, which obviously can't happen until we get better players. I could definitely see that future for him now, whereas I probably couldn't early in the season.
Yeah. He's pretty versatile as an offensive guy. Defensively, it's a mess, but you know, whatever. Okay, Alex, episode 1000 of Down to Dunk is on Friday.
Wow.
I've already received some emails. If you will continue to send me emails on maybe thoughts on your favorite episode, favorite moments, maybe just leave us a note. I've had very, very, very nice stuff sent already. So dtdpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us a tweet. If you have specific moments, somebody sent me a Facebook message through our Down to Dunk Facebook on a specific moment that they thought was very funny. So you can do that as well. So just start sending stuff to us, because we're going to just talk just a lot of different stuff on Friday about just the podcast and how it started and, you know, some of our favorite moments and such. So really excited about that. Really proud of 1,000 episodes of the show. So really looking forward to that day. So be sure to tune in. We'll be live on YouTube for that. And Al, anything else before we go?
Don't break your wrist.
Don't break your wrist, everybody. Everybody enjoy your Wednesday. We'll talk to you guys again on Friday.